a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, kids, here we go. Episode 247. So, wow. I want to do the chatty first segment. I'm not in a very chatty mood this week. I'm in a heavy mood after I distracted it yesterday by listening to by doing an interview with Sean Dalton, which was a nice distraction from all of the political talk and all the emphasis on political thought these days. And oh man, I just so what I'm going to do today is I don't have a real agenda for the show today. I don't have notes. I don't have I don't have bullet points that I want to hit. I'm going to try not to just rant, though. I want to thank Michael Miley. I want to do a shout out to Michael Miley. Miley shot me a text a while ago and said not to spare us from a political show or political ranting, that he likes my ranting, so that he liked the post-election show. And so I just feel like I just don't want to continue adding to this, the constant, you know, being completely just surrounded by political talk. I've heard the word Trump more in the last week than I ever thought I would hear that word in my life. And it just seems like you cannot get away from it right now. And maybe rightly so, when the country is this divided. I mean, we're always kind of like this right after a big election. And when the country's this divided, you know, I mean, maybe it's just normal that that's how we're processing it. But it's just overwhelming at the moment. It's just absolutely overwhelming. And it's one thing to, I'm overwhelmed by how people are treating each other. I'm overwhelmed by the willingness to, it seems like, you know, I've always had friends that are on the far right fringe and friends that are on the far left fringe, and they would be completely disingenuous and assume the absolute worst of anyone that didn't agree with them. But it seems like that has really, really turned into kind of the normal mode of engagement from both sides of the aisle, both sides of the ideological spectrum, is to just assume the absolute worst of the other. It's toxic right now. So I went to, I got up this morning and I went to a coffee house because I was off from the shop, and I just kind of, you know, there's a shop I go to that I can just sit in the corner and just be an anonymous face and drink refills and work on stuff. And I went there and I was just too distracted to try to read or anything. And I was just listening. Now, this shop's in Capitol Hill, which is a total, like, the very young, very millennial, very left-wing neighborhood in Denver. And, you know, there was just tons of, you know, Bernie supporters when he was still in. And so they were, I mean, some of these kids were probably people who would have been at a protest, you know, that were around. But just listening the despair, just listening to the despair on people's minds and on their lips right now is just, it's oppressive. And I can't find myself completely arguing with them, because I don't think that they're completely wrong, in the sense that who we've elected and kind of how he got himself to being elected was, I remember, I mean, if you've been listening to this show, I mean, I'm kind of defending people now who voted for Trump, But especially back when we were still in the primaries and there were a ton of other choices out there and we were trying to decide who we are going to have represent, you know, kind of the more conservative vision of reality, the kind of the role of entrepreneurship at the core of it, the economy and religious freedom and the protection of life and all that. When we were deciding who was going to be the person who elected that, and there were people who were saying, no, we want Trump to be that person, I had very choice words, and I was quick to judge those people, especially because back then the people that were choosing Trump over Rubio, over Ted Cruz, over Rand Paul, over all the other people who were running, at that point they really were seemingly a lot of those people that you would see online, the way they were acting at events and stuff, they were the caricature that's being bandered about, you know, by these protesters. Now they really were kind of violent and very, very full of rage and very, very racist. And I just hated that was even a possibility. And then as it continued to emerge that he was, it came to a head and he was the nominee, I mean, I was just beside myself for the longest time. And then I got over that but then I was kind of like, okay, well, look, I mean, the bad news is we've shot ourselves in the foot, and this continued kind of like, you know, McCain, Romney, Dole, all these people we keep putting up here, you know, okay, we finally shown that, you know, we need to get a real powerful, strong, intelligent, decent human being as a conservative, because he's going to just get trashed by Hillary Clinton. And then I started seeing people that I know to be Democrats and pro-union putting Trump stuff on their Facebook pages. And I saw one friend of mine from back home in Southern Missouri ran a poll, and all these people said who they're going to vote for. And it was 98% Trump. And I thought to myself, oh God, he's going to break the blue wall. And he's going to win the Rust Belt. These people have finally gotten sick of not having a factory to have a union in. So they're going to, there's finally going to be a backlash, and he's going to inherit this. He's going to inherit this backlash. And I started seeing all of my friends who just thought that Trump was horrible, slowly rectifying themselves to the fact that it was Clinton or him. And he was way more likely to put Supreme Court judges in that would protect religious freedom and the right to life. And so they were all just willing to vote for him. It dawned on me. I'm like, he's going to win. This man's going to win. And so since then, you know, he did win. And I consoled myself on election night with the joy of watching Hillary lose and watching the left-wing media just freak out and be completely shocked by flyover country, because that is always a good time. And I just kind of tried to forget the fact that the recipient on the other side of this was going to be Donald Trump. But it was Donald Trump. And so now, in the days after the election, I have just seen friend after friend turn on each other. And people on the left are saying that these are people who were giant Bernie fanatics who hated Hillary and who are now saying that, okay, she's everything that we said she was, and she's horrible, but I can embrace all the things. I can embrace her to stop him, but not be equated with the things that I hate about her. But at the same time, you cannot hold your nose and vote for Trump over Hillary and not be equated with the things that we hate about Trump. So a vote for Hillary, if you're, you'll say you're an ex-Bernie person, a vote for Hillary is a vote for corruption and cronyism and Goldman Sachs and all that stuff. And then, but to vote for her is not to endorse all that. But if you hold your nose and vote for Trump, you are, if you vote for a bigot or a racist, then you are in fact supporting that. That seems to be the view that everyone has. And I have just stepped up and said that everyone from my friends to people in my own family, all these people that voted against Hillary by voting for Trump, were not all racist. And I personally have been attacked online. I've been attacked online. I've been, people have threatened to defriend me on Facebook and stuff. I've been, you know, it's, people have just thought that they're just reducing everyone around them to the worst possible interpretation of their actions. And I just don't know what to do with it. So I'm talking about it. So there you go. Woo. Thank God it's Friday. I could sit with this over the weekend and maybe find something else to talk about. So, all right, we're going to go to the break. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll see you in a second.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so this is my show where I'm literally just like on the couch. You're my therapist, and I'm telling you kind of how I feel. I'm processing the last week kind of out loud. And you're just kind of, you're my friend, or no, you're not really my therapist. You're my friends. We're sitting around drinking, and I'm talking to you guys. You know, we're having a drink saying, hey, what do you think about this? You know, I'm really distraught that now things that I think are very noble and very good and very true, like the defense of religious freedom, like the defense of the innocence of the unborn, of course, all the unborn are innocent. Well, I mean, there's a theological conversation, but, the defense of the unborn, the promotion of entrepreneurship with lower taxes on business owners and helping get more people into the entrepreneurial life. All these things that, and even the real robust protection of our borders and trying to find out who's coming in and where they're from and what they intend. I may not agree with all the methods that Trump has talked about, but I think that having a state, you know, defending our borders is part of what the federal government is for, and not just when, you know, Japan shows up with a bunch of bombers in World War II, or if, you know, suddenly, you know, Canada would decide to come over the border and I don't know, with toques and beer and donuts or something. it's what would they do? I don't know. It's like, but I mean, it's, we really do need to know who's coming into our country. I think we need to be very generous with who comes into our country and take care of people that need to be taken care of. But I think we need to do it in an orderly way. I mean, in the country, as much as I am against the victimization of minorities and the toxic relationship between the police and the inner city, which I've talked about extensively on the show, we do need to promote the rule of law. The problem is that we lost our chance to do all this sanely and in love from the perspective of being led by a good human being who's intelligent and thoughtful and mindful. We lost that chance. And so now all of these positions in the minds of all these people are to be equated with hatred and bigotry. And in the long run, I don't even know if that was a good thing. I'd almost think it'd be better to suffer for 4 years. But, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm glad we're going to hopefully, if he follows up with what he promised, get some Supreme Court judges that will protect the court from, you know, going off the rails for the next generation or so. I mean, I'm in favor of that. I just hate that it had to be him. I hate that. It's funny, I'm defending myself. I didn't even vote for the man. I couldn't bring myself to vote for the man. And I'm sitting in a coffee house this morning listening to people talk about these Trump supporters as if they're talking about the KKK, listening to a beautiful young girl who serves me coffee when I come in, who's super nice to me, and listen to her talk about how As a survivor of sexual assault, there's just no way that she can accept a sexual predator as her leader. And then her being super kind to me and asking me how things are going and asking me how my projects are going, because she knows I design coffee houses and she knows that I have something to do with the religious world. But knowing that if she kind of knew that I would defend people, including my friends and family who voted for Trump, she would probably just put me right into that same basket of deplorables, right? Okay, here's an aside, though, kind of funny. So a couple people came in to get coffee yesterday, and one of them used the phrase basket of deplorables, kind of talking about Hillary. And I said, well, I like to think of it's like more of a, it's more of a purse of unmentionables. It says, well, what about like, you know, a satchel of not so good ones? Or, you know, we just kind of kept going back and forth. We ended up saying, you know, a doubled up Trader Joe's bag of we'd rather not, you know. And it's humor, I think, is the only thing to kind of get us through, humor and prayer. But I think that I'm just walking around, and I feel guilty even though I didn't even vote for the man, because I'm not reacting the way people are, because I'm glad Hillary's not in. It kills me that that's what it took, and I didn't even help. I'll openly admit on the air, you can blame, you can say thanks for nothing if you voted for Trump against Hillary and you think I should have. Great. I didn't vote for Trump. I couldn't get myself to do it. I think that the outcomes of what will happen, I kept describing him as the lesser of two evils. I'm not going to play the game whether he's as a human being. I think it's kind of apples and oranges. I think that Hillary Clinton is just an absolute ideologue that thinks that anything she does is completely justified because the rules don't apply to her because her cause is so just. And she should be allowed to enrich herself along the way by whatever means necessary, because she's the one who's standing up for the cause that is so just. I think that Trump is not ideological. On the good side, I think he really just kind of wants everybody to make some money and have plenty and kind of do well. And, you know, can't we all just get along and kind of just hang out and make a lot of money and do some beautiful, build some big buildings that we think are cool or something, you know? But he's just kind of an old school misogynist guy. And I mean, I don't think he's even ideological enough to be racist, properly speaking. I don't think he's, I think that he just doesn't, he's so far removed from the modern mindset of how you have to speak about these things that, and I want also, I just think that the thing that I hold against him so deeply is that he just used so much hatred and so much anger to pour gas on that to get, he just fomented revolution to get where he wants. And now I think he's going to actually, I think the worst thing that could possibly happen is that he's, not the worst thing, but I think what I'm, part of what I'm afraid of is that now he's going to turn right around and then govern from the center and not really do what he said he was going to do. And everyone who did vote for him is going to look like kind of a dupe, and we're not going to get, we're going to have the worst of both worlds. We're going to get this horrible human being in the White House, and then we're going to turn right around and not get the policy decisions and the Supreme Court appointees and all this that we hope for. And then we'll be like, part of me thinks we deserve it at that point, but part of me can't hold that kind of grudge. You know, it was just a bad situation. It was just a bad situation. And so I'm just like in this situation, I'm just in this place where the space that I inhabit in this world, talking to all kinds of people, you know, I don't exist, even though I work a shop that's inside of a very Catholic environment. We are open to the public. And when I'm not there, I definitely do not exist in kind of a, the Catholic bubble. I exist outside of it. And so every time I walk into a coffee house and sit down, or every time I walk into a bar and sit down and order a drink or go to a restaurant or go to some store or go to some music event for a while, I know that I'm probably one of the very few people in this room that thinks like I do, and that if people around me knew what I, that I would defend people who voted for Trump, that I'm somehow, I would be equated with that bigotry and racism. Cause I've been accused of it. I've had that thrown at me already. And so, thanks for putting up with me just spouting this. I'm just trying to, I always say that this show is the all of reality filtered through the lens of a single human person. I'm not here to teach. I'm not here to do catechesis. I'm not here to promote, my agenda. I'm not here to be an authority. Don't call me and ask me about your grandma's annulment. I'm not a canon lawyer. You know, I say this stuff all the time. And this week, this is what I'm going through. And so this is my reality right now, is just watching things crumble around us in a way that, let's look at the evidence, and then I'm going to try to move on from this. I'm going to try to find something else to talk about. Let's look at the evidence. Look at how many people who voted for Trump, just by the numbers, just look at the data. I saw Michael Moore, of all people, was making this argument on a panel that I saw an article about, that just look, I mean, a ton, the data is there. These people aren't racist, he said. These people, a ton of the people who voted for Obama once, maybe twice, voted for Trump, especially out in the Rust Belt. These are people who voted for a black man whose middle name is Hussein twice, and they voted for Trump. A lot of these states did just, not a lot, but there were states that legalized recreational marijuana that also went for Trump. I mean, that's not ideologically the breakdown that would match the characterization that's flying around about these people. All right. Yeah, I'm just frustrated, but we got to do something else. And I'm going to talk about that when we get back. I'm going to try to do the chatty first segment a little bit in the third segment, because there was something funny that happened last night that I want to talk about. And then I'm going to try, if I can get my mood back up again, I'm going to try to talk about some possibilities on a way forward. Some places that we can make, things that we have to start doing, things that we, that are non-negotiables now. As Catholics, as conservatives, as whatever you want to call us, we have to do now. There's some things we have to do now. So let's go to the break, and we'll get on that when we get back. You're listening to The Counter Position. I'm your host, Andrew Whitley.
Then how we crave a hanging in its dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
People singing, please don't stop. stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so before I dive back into the political thing, I'm always not one to talk about something funny that happened last night. So I'm always talking about the old guys, how much I learn, and I see so much and I learn so much from the old guys and from the foreign people from the gym that I go to. It's like I sit around with like old men and lots of people that are not from America just seem to go to my gym. And I go there to swim, but because I've got a lot of inflammation and kind of stiffness and stuff, before I swim, I spend quite a bit of time sitting in the hot tub, taking, and here lately, this is what I want to talk about, and doing different things to kind of loosen up, right? Mostly sitting in the hot tub and in the sauna. And then I do my swimming, and then afterwards, I kind of stretch out that same way, right? So Justin Schnier, Michael Miley, and some of these guys have got me turned on to, you know, through Wim Hof. And I've also Tim Ferriss, and, you know, I just read an article by Laird Hamilton that listed this as one of the things have got me into the cold shower thing. So people are taking cold showers, doing ice water immersions and stuff like that. It's good for inflammation. It's good for your vascular system. It's good for all kinds of stuff. It helps increase brown fat, which is more metabolically active, burns more and stuff. There's just all these different things that it does. And I've found that, you know, it's like when you have an injury, you do a lot of times they'll tell you to do hot and then cold and then cold, you know, and then hot again, back and forth between hot and cold, because that will move fresh blood into the thing. And so I figured out for whatever reason that if I go to the gym and I let myself get good and warmed up and stretched out in the hot tub, and then I go take an ice cold shower and I get back in the hot tub for a while, I take an ice cold shower. If I do that a few times, it really, really, really helps with kind of inflammation and some pain that I have, you know? So I've started doing that. So usually my thing is when I go to the gym, what I usually do is I come in, I get in the hot tub and then I kind of get really loose and I stretch out. I stretch my shoulders and I'll stretch my hamstrings and my low back and stuff. And I get myself all kind of limber as best I can, kind of stretch my hamstrings really good because they can kind of cramp sometimes when I swim. I'll get all that stretched out. And then I go take a cold shower and then I get back in after I, you know, 2 to 5 minutes under a cold shower, and I get back in the hot tub and then I get all loosened up and I'll get in the pool. And then I swim, you know, 4 or 5 laps, you know, just kind of, you know, just kind of like at a jog pace, so to speak, you know, kind of like a third speed of what I can go. And then I do high intensity interval training where you basically do sprints, but I swim the sprints because I'm a big fat guy. And if I tried to go run sprints, I would blow my knees and ankles out. So, I do swim sprints instead, trying to get myself in shape. And then I get out, and if I have time, then I'll do some more of that kind of like hot tub, cold shower thing. And if I do that enough, well, I feel great. I feel really, really, really good, you know? But because of all that time sitting around, I end up making conversation with these old guys. Like, that's what they do in the evening, is they go sit in the hot tub and hang out and talk to each other and stuff. And it was so clear yesterday, is that this young guy comes in and he's on the phone the whole time. He's got his headphones in, he's on the phone, he gets in the hot tub carefully and sets it up on the side, and he's sitting there talking on the phone. And the old men are just looking at him like, kid, get off the phone. You're sitting around people, you know? And it's just like, they were just looking at him and looking at me like, what the hell's wrong with people? I mean, and this guy is just completely, completely in his own little world. And it was just so funny. It's like, you see the old chatty guys and the young, completely oblivious to everyone guy. That was pretty stark, you know? So there's a more of a serious thing. I mean, I got to thinking about, yeah, that, you know, that completely insular, completely in my own worldness that kind of typifies the young now is why people are freaking out and turning over cars and all that stuff. Well, that, and because they're being paid paid to do so. But the funny thing that happened was this old man walks by and he catches a little spray from my cold shower and he realizes what I'm doing because I'm kind of doing these big breathing exercises. I'm like, you know, taking big deep breaths and kind of letting them out kind of forcefully and pulling them in and out and kind of moving that warm blood around in the cold shower, right? And he just looks at me like I'm nuts and he starts asking me about it. So I'm standing there under the, cold shower and, laughing and kind of explaining to him, you know, kind of why I'm doing what I'm doing. And he just thinks I'm nuts. He just thinks I'm crazy. And every time I go over to get in a cold shower, that old guy would come out of the sauna or he'd get out of the pool or something. He would come over and he'd be like, I could see icicles forming in your beard. It's like, So now I am officially the old man at the old man at the club officially think I'm crazy for taking cold showers now. And I have Michael Miley and Justin Schneer to thank for it. So I'm going out at the end of the month to see Over the Rhine, an acoustic Christmas show at the Troubadour. And I'll be spending the weekend at Justin's. And so Justin's already got me swearing that I'm going to do the ice. I'm going to do the ice bath thing. So we've FaceTimed this once where him and some of the kids did that. So we may end up with a Facebook Live video of me getting into a bathtub full of ice water. So, we'll, you know, that should be a good time. If you're a fan of the counter position, watching me climb into a bathtub full of ice water will probably be fairly entertaining. I just hope that I can keep it safe for the kids while I'm experiencing what I'm experiencing in the ice water. So, all right. So there you go. Chatty there. I tried to get chatty a little bit, talk about how the old men at the club think I'm crazy because I take cold showers. There's a lot of really, this thing has kind of like gotten off the, this is hitting at least fad level, if not trend level. There's a lot of people talking about the cold shower thing. So, maybe I'll do a little more research and do like a full segment on the science behind the cold shower thing at some point. I'm starting to, I was kind of mocking it, but I'm kind of experiencing it as the thing. And the other thing about taking a cold shower too, is that boy, it focuses you. I tell you what, man, it focuses you when you are taking a cold shower. And I've noticed the shower in my house, I guess because the pipes have less to go from underground, they have less building to go through and less heat from walls and stuff. It's colder than at the club. And I'd forgotten that. And I got up this morning, took a hot shower, and I was kind of stiff. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do a couple cycles here. And so I knocked it down, took some brass, and then knocked it down to cold. And whew, boy, I tell you what, that'll wake you up. That you will focus. You are on what, when you are taking a cold shower, the only thing you are doing is taking a cold shower. And it will put you in the moment, and you will be very aware of what you're doing. And I have to admit, after a cold shower, I mean, it is like a cup of coffee slammed or more. It's like it, you are productive at that point. You get out of there and you get cleaned up and you're like, whew, I mean, it focuses you. It's worth doing. So, all right, there you go. I did 9 minutes almost talking about taking cold showers and old men thinking I'm crazy just so that I wouldn't sit and talk about Trump anymore. So. You know, but it's funny. I'm apologizing for this, but just for putting more and more of this out into the media world when this is going on. But, you know, like Michael texted me a while ago and because I had said something about that. And I hope that maybe I can just by trying to be personal and trying not to be ideological and just talking about how this is hitting me. And how what my experience of the thing is, maybe this will just be a different tone than everybody else. Because I think that, I think we have to start taking seriously how other people feel in the sense of trying to understand how they feel that way. And so if people are scared, you know, if people are scared now because of who's president, I think we need to really understand why they think that way and why they're scared. And maybe they have the right to be scared, depending on who they are, at least from his from the followers that are some of these more reactionary types from back in the primary days. There's already been acts of violence against minorities and stuff in schools. Mostly just kids are kids and they're idiots. Kids have always been cruel and mean, but some of that has already happened. And then on the other hand, if you're listening to me and you're on the left and you have friends and family and people you care around you who held their nose and voted for Donald Trump over Hillary, then it's you should probably just go, okay, look, I know Bob. I know Susie. She's not a racist. She's not a misogynist. She's not a horrible human being. So there must be a situation in which, relatively intelligent, good human beings can choose to vote for this person over this other person. And you might want to take seriously why they did that. Why did the blue wall get broken? Why did all those people out there in the Rust Belt, many of which you elected Obama twice, why did they vote for Trump? Overwhelmingly, why did they? They didn't suddenly become racist. We need to start asking ourselves, why did that happen? And so when we get back in the fourth segment, I want to talk about some things we can do moving forward and some things that we have to do, that we absolutely have to do, and kind of cast a vision a little bit. So you're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley, and we'll see you in just a few minutes.
Then all the colored glass that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right. Segment four. I feel like I'm on the final lap. I definitely today, I joke about that. I feel like the fat kid that after doing okay with the shot put and discus, I'm being forced to run the open mile right there in front of God and everybody, in front of the rest of the team. There's pretty girls from another school, and I'm forced to do something that I didn't want to do, that I don't feel like doing, right in front of God and everybody. And talking about politics on the show today is the fourth lap. So I'm sacrificing my pride and my body and my vulnerability for the game. All right. So we live in an incredibly divided nation right now. Everyone on the left thinks that everyone on the right is misogynist jerks and racist and greedy xenophobes. So we have to not live like that. We need to treat women with deep respect, stand up for the respect of women. And if our president says something sexist or something, we need to call him on it. We need to stand out and go, okay, this guy has an R behind his name. I have an R behind my name, but I do not support that. That's not okay. We need to stand up and not let ourselves be completely cast into the light of the assumptions of the people that are our competitors in the ideological space, right? Gosh, that was a heavily pedantic and tortured syntax laden sentence, wasn't it? If I'd have made a basic grammar mistake, which I very well may have, you should probably drink. That's part of the drinking game. So we have to begin to become real. We got to double down on our respect, especially for women, for minorities. Here's another: we have to, and this is something that's been so top of mind as I've been working in Flint, Michigan, is that we have got to start dividing. We have got to start killing this division between races in America. We have to start actually talking to each other. And like those, you know, little liberal kids on that video that were trying to defend black people from being being attacked in some way or held from voting in some way by voter ID laws, and then saying things like, well, they don't know how to work the internet, or they can't find the DMV, or saying all these incredibly racist things, that we need to be the side that steps up and actually takes people seriously, regardless of their color, regardless of their race. We need to actually begin to get outside of our comfort zones. And instead of sitting around in our own little white suburban bubbles, we need to begin to break down those barriers and begin to make our churches, make our schools, make our dinner parties a little less monotone, you know, and start talking to each other and start standing up for people. And if someone needs to someone to help them feel safe, then we need to be the one that steps up and tries to make them feel safe. We need to try to help people. We have to, you know, we can defend our borders and champion the poor at the same time. We don't have to just turn into xenophobes and just assume that everyone who, I started to say, isn't like us, but look at America. There's people who are not white, who are not Christian, who as Americans are like us, right? We're not, us is not just white, Christian, conservative, you know, suburban America anymore. That just isn't the reality. And we need to stop acting like, we need to get back to the good old days when that was the reality, because we look like a bunch of racists. We look like a bunch of idiots that are just scared to death of anybody that isn't like us, you know. And I think that the people who can lead this in a great extent is the Catholic Church. Why? Because the word Catholic means universal. The Catholic Church is way, way older than this country, and it's global. There are saints and people in this church from every single race, country, walk of life, poor, rich, everybody from extremely poor black people in Africa to the King of France. Have been saints, to Jewish people killed in concentration camps. I mean, there's people, we have all these people as saints in our church, right? We need to be able to have the perspective to be bigger than nationalism, while at the same time looking towards the common good and the proper role of a state, you know, of our nation. Right. I think that, and I've been on this box for a while, but Catholic social doctrine, I think, can play the role here where we have a real serious concern for the poor. That is our aim. We have a preferential option for the poor. We also understand the role of work and personal responsibility in human dignity. We understand the role of the family in human flourishing and in even economic flourishing. We understand the role of the protection of life in these things, but it has to be that in that context, like I've said 1,000 times, and this has been my mantra here lately, and I'm trying to get myself to actually act on it instead of just saying it all the time, is that the time of believing in the gospel and not acting on it, the same way that the time of acting on the gospel and not believing in it, though both of those, the time of that is over. And so we now more than ever have got to be politically active, religiously active, charitably active, and we have to be out there working that balance, working that completely different way of viewing things that is our inheritance as Roman Catholics, and standing up and speaking truth to power when it needs to be spoken to. So great. We stopped Hillary from appointing a bunch of Supreme Court justices that are going to make it easier and easier to kill babies later and later and later, and make it harder and harder to be a Christian in this world and not have your rights trampled. And they're probably not going to be coming into our churches and tearing them down anytime soon, because we won't do gay marriages in our churches or whatever. But even there, there's a good, another good example, which, just an aside, it's pretty funny, is that Trump makes his very conservative supporters kind of uncomfortable, because he just gives a lot of lip service to LGBTQ rights. I mean, in Greeley, Colorado, they're just right before the election, there was a big rally, and he saw someone with gays for Trump in the audience that had a rainbow flag, and he pulled it up on stage and ran back and forth waving this flag that said either gays for Trump or LGBTQ for Trump. I mean, waving it. I mean, look at Milo Yiannopoulos. I mean, saying time and time again that Trump was the only person that was saying, look, if you want to come to this country and you think that you should be able to throw gays off of buildings because they're gay, you're not welcome here. So I think there's a kind of, politics makes weird bedfellows, right? The left that are supposedly so pro-gay are really, really, really working hard to not know who's coming into the country and to not double down or question, you know, not to question anybody about what they believe when they come in the country. And they're letting people in the country who will hate or hurt these people all the time. Just look at the Pulse nightclub bombing, right? Shooting. And this guy that supposedly is this giant hater is the one that's saying, no, if you want to throw these people off buildings, you're not welcome in our country. You know, I think that that's kind of, I think he's kind of an he's not ideological. I think the guy's kind of an opportunist in that sense. But I just don't think but that's something that just doesn't match up. So, but we need to stand with people. If someone is being targeted and truly being oppressed because of that, then we need to be the ones to stand up for it, and we need to walk with them, and we need to accompany them, as the Pope has asked over and over and over again. And that you can do that without endorsing everything in their lifestyle and saying there is no truth, there is no sexual truth, there is no nature, there is no principles underneath this reality. You don't have to say that. You don't have to be like that. You could, because people are not sexual orientations. People are not gender confusion. People are not even race or economic class. People are not, people are individuals. People are human persons. And we have to start treating them as such. So we need to become, in this time, as Catholics, known as those who will stand up with those people. And we need to also look to all the people that elected Trump, not the ones that didn't hold their nose and vote for him as anti-Hillary, the ones that enthusiastically wanted to, you know, flip off Washington and elect an outsider. All these people out in the Rust Belt that are sick to death and broke the blue wall for him. We need to ask, what's going on with them? What are they hurting for? What do they need? And I think that we have a really serious, beautiful vision for that reality too, in the world of subsidiarity and distributism and all that stuff. So we have to start playing offense, or we're just going to get cast in this light. But all right, so there's been my end of Trump week rant muse show. I'm going to do my best to only do like one segment about this stuff going forward, or I don't want this show to turn into this. So all right, let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. We'll see you on the other side.
I'll take your place in my old stone. I'll take your place in my old stone.